I hope you're having a great Friday and looking forward to a great weekend. Make sure that you're with your brothers and sisters in Christ this Lord's Day. Everybody needs a home church. Everybody needs to be active participants in the worship and fellowship and service and praise and prayer and study, everything that we do when we get together as brothers and sisters in Christ. If you don't have a home church, you need to find one. If you're looking right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, we would love to see you pop by, and we'd love to even be able to keep you as part of our family. Even if you want to just pop over for a little visit, I'd love to see you. Make sure you introduce yourself to me as one of my radio Bible students. I'd love that a lot. I'd like to also say thank you to those who are supporting Into the Word on the radio and also on the internet. We love being able to acknowledge that we could not do this without your sacrificial assistance. God bless you for that. Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 18, starting at verse number 19, and talk about the end of the Absalom coup. We know that David had given instructions that when the battle was engaged, Absalom was to be captured, not killed. Joab totally blew that off. And when Absalom ended up hanging by his hair from a tree, Joab murdered him along with some of Joab's men. And then they took his body, threw it into a depression out there in the old growth forest of Ephraim, and covered him up with stones in an unmarked grave. Just going to let him rot there. But the coup is now over. Once the word got out that Absalom was dead, all of his supporters lost their, they lost their idea that something could continue to happen. I think many of them realize now that they were on the wrong side, that David is God's choice to remain as king, and they were on the wrong side and therefore on the losing side. So once the rout happened, most of these people just ran straight home, left the battlefield and ran straight home. But now Joab has to let the king know how the battle went on this day. The battle was just one day. So the king is waiting to find out. So verse number 19, Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, this is a young priest who has been a runner for David's forces before. He says, "Let me run and carry news to the king that he who is has delivered him from the hand of his enemies." So he wants to run the how many ever miles it is back to Mahanaim and let David know the coup is over. But Joab said to him, "You're not going to carry the news today. You can carry news another day. But today you shall carry no news because the king's son is dead." I shared with you as we were closing up last time, I think Joab is concerned that David may react very negatively to news about his son's death. And the last two times that David reacted negatively to news about the death of someone, he's killed the messengers. He's executed them. And so it's possible that Joab is thinking he's sparing Ahimaaz's life. If that's the case, then that's not good news for this Cushite in verse number 21. Then Joab said to the Cushite, "Go tell the king what you have seen." Cushite means that he is from Ethiopia. However, he got to the Israeli territory, he has joined the courier corps. I suspect that that means he's converted to the faith in He Who Is, and has become a Jewish member of society by converting. But if I'm right that Joab thinks that the messenger is going to be killed, he's actually sending this guy on a suicide mission. But the Cushite bowed before Joab, and then he ran. Then Ahimaaz, son of Zadok, again said to Joab, "Come what may, let me also run after the Cushite." So a few minutes after the Cushite leaves, running as a courier corps member, Ahimaaz comes back to Commander Joab and says, "I don't care. I want to go. I want to take this news." Joab said, "Why will you run, my son, seeing that you will have no reward for the news?" So again, the idea that Joab thinks that whoever passes the news of Absalom's death to King David is going to feel David's wrath. So Joab said, "Why do you want to go? You're not going to be rewarded for this." Ahimaaz says back, "Come what may, I will run." So Joab said to him, "Well then, run." And so Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain and outran the Cushite. So we don't know exactly where Joab is at when he dispatches this news. It seems to be somewhere down toward the Jordan Valley, toward the Jordan River. But there's a lot of hill country and woods between there and the city of Mahanaim. A direct route is going to be a difficult run. And that's apparently the route that the Cushite takes. Ahimaaz decides that even though it might be a little bit longer, he's going to stay to more flat land and maybe even follow the Jabbok River upstream until he can get to Mahanaim. And apparently, his way worked best. Verse number 24. Now, David was sitting between the two gates. The way that many of these fortified cities were arranged is there was an outer gate and an inner gate. And between the two was kind of the marketplace, the place where people gathered for exchange of oaths and business deals, things of that nature. It was a security thing, where you had two lines of defense by having two gates. So David's inside that security zone, as we would call it, waiting for news. The watchman went up to the roof of the gate by the wall. So the watchman is on the outer gate, the external gate, and he's looking for runners. He lifted up his eyes and looked, and he saw a man running alone. The watchman called out and told the king, and the king said, "Well, if he's alone, there's news in his mouth." So, meaning, if it's not a whole bunch of people running away from the battle, like a rout, then it must be a courier, must be somebody bringing news about the battle. So he drew nearer and nearer. Remember, line of sight is several miles, probably. And so they're watching these guys approach the city. The watchman saw another man running. The watchman called to the gate and said, "See, another man running alone." And the king said, "Well, he also brings news." And the watchman then says, "I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok." So the watchman is familiar enough with the courier corps that he can recognize the running style of a member of the courier corps, Ahimaaz in particular. He says, "He runs an awful lot like Ahimaaz." And so the king said, "Oh, he's a good man, and he comes with good news. So he assumes that because it's a good guy, somebody he trusts, that it's probably good news. So Ahimaaz cried out to the king as he comes in through the gate, "All is well." And he bowed before the king with his face to the earth. Blessed be he who is your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. So basically, the coup is over. God has given victory against the rebel forces. The king then said, "Is it well with the young man Absalom?" So the first thing he wants to know, after knowing that the battle is over and that the coup is finished, has Absalom been captured? Is he still alive? Now, Ahimaaz knows that he's not, that he's dead. But Ahimaaz, I think, as he was running, may have been reprocessing why Joab didn't want him to run. And that is that the king would not be happy to find out that his son is dead and might even lash out at the messenger. You know, we still have, you know, sayings about don't kill the messenger. Well, Ahimaaz, he evades. He deflects. Ahimaaz answered, "When Joab sent the king's servant, your servant, I saw a lot of commotion. I don't know what that was all about." So he doesn't say, "Yes, everything's okay with Absalom." He doesn't say, "No, he's dead." He says, "When I left, there was a lot of commotion. I didn't know what it was all about. I'm just here to tell you that the coup is over." So he deflects and evades. So the king said, "Turn aside, stand here. So let's wait for the next messenger." So he turned aside and he stood still. Behold, the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, "Good news for my lord the king, for he who has delivered you this day from the hand of all who rose up against you." So the coup is over. Verse 32, the king said to the Cushite, same thing, "Is it well with the young man Absalom?" David believes, and I think he has a rightful expectation here, that his orders to capture Absalom would have been carried out. That if the coup is over, Absalom should be in custody. So, is it well with the young man Absalom? The Cushite answered, "May the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be like that young man." Now, that was a typical way of phrasing, he's dead as he should be. And as soon as David heard that message, he was deeply moved. And he went up to the chamber over the gate and he wept. So he's now been told that his son, the coup leader, is dead. But it is his son, and he grieves over it. Now, he goes up above the entrance gate into a room, perhaps that he's been staying in there today. And he begins to weep and mourn and cry loudly. And as he went, he said, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would that I had died instead of you. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." And I think all of us can understand how moved he was at this point. Even though his son wanted him dead, he didn't want his son dead. And the news of his death has broken him. And all he can do is weep and wail and cry. And he is so expressive in his grief that anybody that comes through that gate can hear him. And that becomes a problem because behind the runners start arriving the soldiers returning from the battle. So within the next hour, couple of hours, all of the warriors start arriving back. Among those warriors is Joab. Chapter number 19. It was told Joab, "Behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom." So David is up above the entrance gate to the city, and he's carrying on and crying and weeping and wailing. Verse 2, "So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people, for the people heard that day, the king is grieving for his son." And David's grief becomes the tone setting for all of those returning from the battle. So the people stole into the city that day as people steal in who are ashamed when they flee in battle. So even though they won the day, because the king is grieving the loss of his son so loudly, they can't feel good about what they just accomplished. And so they just come in through the gate, or maybe they go around to a different gate, and they don't celebrate. "The king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, 'Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son!' And then Joab came into the house to the king, and he said, 'You have today covered the with shame the faces of all your servants who have this day saved your life and the lives of your sons and your daughters and the lives of your wives and your concubines, because you love those who hate you and hate those who love you.'" So Joab comes in and chews David out. Now, we've talked about the idea that Joab is David's nephew, but he is probably very close in age to David because Joab is the son, apparently the eldest son, of David's oldest sister. And so Joab feels perfectly comfortable with telling the king, "You're screwing everything up today. You're shaming your own soldiers. The people who went out there and fought to save not just you, but your wives, your concubines, your sons, your daughters. You're shaming them because you apparently love the guy that hated you more than you love the people that love you. You have made it clear today that the commanders and servants are nothing to you. For today I know that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased." So he just tells David, he gives David what for, tells him, "You're in the wrong here, bud. You need to make it clear how much you appreciate what your soldiers did for you today." Verse number 7, "Now therefore arise, you go out, and you speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by he who is, if you don't go, not a man's going to stay with you this night, and there will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now." I think Joab is probably correct in his assessment here, that if David does not go out there and welcome his soldiers home and tell them, "Thank you, thank you for putting down the coup. They're going to abandon him. It won't matter that Absalom's dead. They'll be part of a new coup. And I think David actually does recognize this. And so the king arose, and then he took his seat in the gate. So he goes and he sits upon a chair, a throne, if you will, because any chair that a king sits on is his throne, right next to the gate that these people are coming through, and welcomes them back. He dries his tears, puts on a smile, if that's what it takes, nods, speaks, shakes a few hands perhaps, but he lets everybody know that's coming back now, good job, well done. So the people were all told, behold, the king is sitting in the gate, and all the people came before the king. So now the mood begins to change and come back into alignment where it needs to be, and that is support of King David. We turn our attention back to the routed forces of Absalom. It says, now Israel had fled every man to his own home. So all the people from north to south who had supported Absalom, they've all gone home with their tails between their legs because they were on the losing side. Once they realize that David is still in power, it occurs to them that they need to bring him back home to Jerusalem. So all the people were arguing throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king delivered us from the hand of our enemies. He saved us from the hand of the Philistines. He's fled out of the land from Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now, therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing the king back? So the new conversation is, what are we going to do to get him back to Jerusalem? He needs to come back to the capital city, and we need to be part of that. And we need to be seen as part of that because we want him to understand we are on his side. You know how it works. You support the wrong person, and then that falls apart. You do your best to get on board with the person who prevailed in the conversations. So King David sent this message to Zadok and Abiathar, the priests. So he sends a message back to Jerusalem, back to the two priests that he left there with the Ark of the Covenant. Say to the elders of Israel, that is the members of the Sanhedrin, why should you be the last to bring the king back to his house when the word of all Israel has come to the king? So I am still king. Why are you not inviting me to come back to Jerusalem and making arrangements for that? Verse 12, you are my brothers. You are my bone, my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? So he talks specifically to the Judah leaders, who apparently many of them went along with the Absalom coup. After all, Absalom would have been from their tribe as well. So you guys need to set the example of getting me back to the king, back to the throne, back to the palace. Say to Amasa, remember Amasa is the commander of the United Israeli forces under Absalom. So you tell my grandnephew that it's time for him to take a lead in bringing me back. You say to Amasa, are you not my bone and my flesh? God do so to me and more also if you are not commander of my army from now on in place of Joab. Now this is interesting. Even though Amasa supported Absalom, David offers to him the job of remaining commander of the military forces, that Joab is not going to return to that position. David is not happy with Joab. He hasn't been happy with Joab for many years. And at the moment he found out that Joab was the one that had murdered his son against his express orders, David was not going to let him remain commander of the military forces. So Amasa, in David's mind, is a more honorable person. So he swayed the heart of all the men of Judah as one man. And so they sent word to the king, "Return, both you and all your servants." So now the arrangements have been made for David to make that several-day trip. It's about a three-day trip from Mahanaim down to the Jordan Valley, across the Jordan River, and then back up to Jerusalem itself, where David will be welcomed as the king back to Jerusalem. So the king came back to the Jordan. Judah, that is the whole tribe or the representative sample of it, came to Gilgal to meet the king and to bring the king over the Jordan. So Gilgal is the city that's right next to the ruins of Jericho. Very often we talk about Jericho as a reference point. But Jericho was actually just in ruins still at this point. It's Gilgal that's the city on the west side of the Jordan. So the Judah tribe gets to Gilgal, and they're making the arrangements to help bring all of David's people across the fords of Jordan back into the main part of the Promised Land, and from there back up to the city of Jerusalem.